Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. We'll take a few calls today, but not until a little bit later on in the show. We have a couple of guests off the top. Lance doing a good job tracking John Peterson, Pittsburgh's offensive line coach. We'll talk about the Giants' sixth-round pick, Adam Bisnawati. And then we will have Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus to kind of give their special statistical breakdown of the Giants' draft class. Maybe we even touched on a couple of their undrafted free agents that Jerry Reese happened to mention on the radio the other day. So those are the guys we can talk about, which is great. So give us a call a little bit later on in the show, but a lot going on in Lance. It's, you know, everyone's kind of had a weekend to absorb what the Giants have done in the draft. And to absorb what the Giants have done in the draft, and now they begin to take a look at what's going to happen here with this draft class being in town. Now we got your headset squared away.
See, there we go. A little technical glitch off the top, nothing too concerned.
We're good to go, Dave. And now we're joined by John Peterson, the Pittsburgh offensive line coach. He was with Adam Bisnawati in Pittsburgh for his college career there. John, you have John Schmelk and Lance Meadow up here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Good morning, and thanks a lot for the time today. We appreciate it.
Oh, great to be here, guys.
All right, John, well, why don't you just kind of give us the thumbnail on the type of guy Adam is first before we get to the on-the-field stuff, the technique, and all that other stuff. What was it like being in a meeting room with him and teaching him one-on-one during the course of your time in Pitt with him?
You know, Biz is a very hungry person when it comes to knowledge and learning. He's always been a very professional college student when it comes to his, daily preparation and loves to study the game, and he's an information seeker. He wants to know everything about a play and all the details of everything. And, you know, for a young guy who's really transitioned through multiple offensive coordinators, adapted very well at, every scheme we've used.
Well, with that being said, the fact that he has had to deal with a variety of offensive coordinators and coaches, I know you came in 2015, so, Coach, you've been with him for the last two seasons. How much progress have you seen from him in terms of his development going back to the first time you saw him?
You know, he's developed tremendous, and it's credit to his, really diligence to the detail of his training. You know, he's a person who comes in early and stays late and spends time on his body and spends a lot of time on studying the game also.
You know, and Coach, you guys didn't run what a lot of other college team runs, where you're running a lot of spread, you're throwing it 40, 50 times a game. You guys ran the football there. So in terms of what you did schematically, do you think that'll be a little bit of an easier transition for him to the NFL game than maybe some of these other spread-heavy offensive linemen might have jumping from college to the pros?
You know, I think the diversity and what he's been exposed to from the different style of run games he's adapted well to, whether it's a zone scheme or gap scheme. You know, he understands the details of everything and was able to adapt, extremely well into all the systems.
We're talking with Adam Bisnawati, the Giants' sixth-round draft pick, his offensive line coach at Pitt, John Peterson, providing some insight on his play. And, Coach, when he spoke to the media, he described himself as a nasty football player. Why do you think that's fitting based on what you've seen?
Well, you know, he takes a lot of pride in, being a tough guy from Pittsburgh and playing at Pitt. And, he was a leader in our room, and you know, he nicknamed the group the OG Mud Gang. So he likes to get in the mud and play in the trenches and play physical football.
Now, obviously, he was a four-year starter at left tackle. You were there for his final two seasons. Mm-hmm. Some people have talked about him going into the pro level. He might be a guy that could switch to guard. Do you see that type of potential position versatility with him if an NFL team did decide to try to move him inside?
Yeah. He's a strong point of attack lineman who understands leverage and is a strong point of attack run blocker.
Coach, he's 6'5", and I know when you make the transition from college to the pros, what a lot of people bring up is when you have tall offensive linemen, you know, getting their pad level at the correct spot. How much has that been a challenge, I mean, given his size throughout the course of his collegiate career?
You know, the one thing, you know, Adam does is he understands, you know, the physicality of your hands and using your hands to gain leverage. And you know, as he continues to, you know, fine-tune his game, you know, he understands, you know, how to get to leverage and whether it's your pads or your hands, you know, he knows what he's doing.
What are some of the things that you were really focusing on with him in your last 2 years there with him in terms of technique, things that you were trying to get him to improve upon, and areas where you did see a lot of progress?
You know, I think all linemen, as they evolve as college players, it's still the fundamentals. You know, it's your footwork, it's playing with your cleats in the ground and you know, playing, you know, the one thing that Biz does is he plays violently and plays with velocity. You know, he's not a hesitator, and you know, when you play fast and physical and play with your cleats in the ground, you got a good chance to win some battles.
Coach, I was looking through your resume, and this is a bit of a small world because Giants fans are familiar with the name Jake Ballard, and you happen to be his tight ends coach at Ohio State.
Oh, is that true? I missed
that.
Yes,
indeed.
Wow.
And now we got another Giant who you coach en route to East Rutherford. I'm just curious. I mean, do you have some type of a connection here with the Giants where you're able to feed quality players to them? What's going on here, Coach?
It's a great program, and obviously, you know, Jake had a tremendous career there that, you know, was fun to watch from a distance and still have a great relationship with Jake and Jimmy Cordell, I know, was part of that.
Yep.
So I've been blessed to be around a lot of good players and you know, Biz is right up there with them.
Coach, final question for me. If you want to go, if I could, I have the chance to go back and watch a couple of his games. If you could recommend a couple of games for me to go back to watch where you really thought Adam put on his best display and would be a great game to watch to see what he can do, what games would you recommend from the last couple of years?
Oh, boy. You know, there's been an awful lot of them. You know, I know the Penn State game early on last year was a fun game, and you know, the thing that jumps out, he's a consistent player, you know, and he prepared every week, and every game was a championship game to him, so you know, the Penn State game was a fun one. Obviously, Clemson was a fun game too, and you know, a lot of good memories and a lot of things that he did a great job here at Pitt.
You know, Coach, you mentioned preparation, and before you mentioned he's always trying to seek out more information. Obviously, the playbook in the NFL can be a lot thicker than sometimes what people have in college. The terminology can be different.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think his adjustment's going to be mentally in that regard week to week?
Oh, I think he that's the one thing that he is going to – he's an information guy. He he wants to know. He'll seek it, and you know, whether it's the pass protection and ID and the linebackers and adjusting on the run on the field, you know, that's what he does. And I think, you know, he's prepared himself to play at that level. And, you know, I'm excited to watch him go and compete.
Coach, last one for me as we're talking with John Peterson, Pitt offensive line coach who coached Adam Biznawati, the Giants' sixth-round pick in the 2017 class. Throughout your coaching career, you've been in a variety of big-time conferences. I mentioned Ohio State. How much does the ACC, in your mind, you think prepare players to make the transition from college to the pros, specifically offensive linemen?
You know, I can just, you know, obviously speak specifically to the Pitt experience, and then, you know, whether, you know, you look at the history of the Pitt O linemen and then playing in this conference, you're going to be challenged by tremendous speed on the edges and tremendous physical play in the interior. So I think it's a great, great conference that, you know, challenges the offense and defensive linemen at the highest level.
And by the way, Pitt had four other players drafted, Coach, in this year's draft. And believe it or not, all but one on the offensive side of the ball. Dorian Johnson, a guard a lot of people like, went in the fourth round to the Cardinals. Then, of course, you have James Conner, the great story, stays at home, and Nathan Peterman. Obviously, you interacted with these guys on the offensive side of the ball. Just give us a quick thumbnail on each one of those three guys before we say goodbye.
Well, you know, it's they're all winners. You know, I think they're high character, tough guys who they care what they do on and off the field. They're all going to represent their families, the university at a high level, and wish them all the best of luck because they've earned it. You know, everything they've done, they've put in the work and time, and they're exceptional people and exceptional football players.
Coach, thank you so much for the time. It's much appreciated. Best of luck with the rest of your spring schedule, and good luck next season in the ACC.
Thanks so much, Coach.
You got it. Thanks, guys. See ya.
That's the offensive line coach for the Pittsburgh Panthers, John Peterson. As Lance mentioned to you, he's been all over the place, Akron, Ohio State. I think he was at Ohio State for 8 years, from 04 to 11, if I remember correctly.
He was the tight ends coach. That's where he interacted with Ballard. And he was also, by the way, at Miami of Ohio with Ben Roethlisberger, too.
You know, I remember seeing that. I didn't put the Big Ben thing
together.
That's
what I said. Yeah, we're talking about over 25 years of coaching experience.
And he was an assistant head coach at Akron, by the way.
Yeah.
So he has a number of different positions and played a number of different roles with these organizations. So good to talk to him. And, you know, he sounds like the way he described him reminds me of David Deal, which is the player comparison that was made at the press conferences when the Giants hierarchy talked about the pick. That's the type of guy, player, that he seems to be.
Well, he seems to be also, using Deal as an example, somebody who has perhaps the versatility to move inside if you needed him to make the transition.
And smart enough to do it.
Exactly. And that's obviously a big key.
Yeah, no question about it. And, of course, I want to mention one other player real quick from the Giants. Of course, Jerry Reese mentioned on the air with Mike Francesi the other day that Chad Wheeler, the offensive lineman, is going to be one of the undrafted free agent selections at USC. And he was rated by a lot of people as a fourth or fifth or even a third round pick, depending on who you talked about. So I think he could be another good addition. Him and Bisnawadi can really be developmental guys in the pipeline to get the Giants to develop a couple more offensive linemen along with Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers.
Well, and also plays into the theme of competition, and that's been a big part of the narrative this offseason, and it goes back to when Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo addressed the media immediately after the playoff loss to the Packers. The theme of that conversation was to bring in competition, no matter where those players were on the offensive line, whether it be tackle, whether it be guard, whether it be center. And I think that between the draft, between undrafted free agents, between free agency, they've brought in competition. How that plays out remains to be seen, but you've got the bodies now in camp, and hopefully these guys push one another and let the best man win. Because at the end of the day, they're looking for the top five guys to be on the offensive line, the best five combination. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and look, they'll have great competition, and you're looking for someone to be that swing tackle, too, because as much as people seem to complain about him, Marshall Newhouse did play a very valuable role on the team last year. Not only the swing tackle being the backup left tackle, right tackle, he was also the backup guard at the end of the year. He played a couple games at guard when Justin Pugh went down in the middle of the season, so a very valuable player, and I think that people believe that he can play that. Bisnawadi and Wheeler could fit into that type of role as a swing guy and as a backup.
Well, because Brett Jones is sort of the swing interior offensive
lineman. Yeah, center to guard.
Correct. So if you can have the tackle to complement that, John, you know, then you at least say, hey, we've got two options on the depth chart that we think could pan out here.
Yeah, and Fluker can slide from guard to tackle and things like that. So, you know, those sort of things should work out for the Giants. And look, you always – and here's the thing. I think it was Nick Saban that said this last week on an interview that I saw. Now the offensive line in the NFL is a developmental position. You do not have many plug-and-play guys come in. There aren't a lot of Tyron Smiths. You know, eventually, you know, occasionally you'll get a Taylor Lewan that'll come in and do well right away. Ronnie Stanley did a pretty good job coming in for the Ravens. Conklin last year did the same thing for Tennessee. But with all these spread programs, it's tough to find these guys that are really ready to come in right away. And do a good job. So you have to draft these guys late, try to develop them in-house. Hopefully you can coach them up a little bit, and they can become productive players for you. Again, we'll take your calls later on in the show at 201-939-4513. But now we're joined by Pro Football Focus's own Sam Monson. He's one of the guys that helps put together the 2017 Pro Football Focus Draft Pass. Sam, I'm holding up the book. It was a great resource for me during this draft process. Thank you for putting that together, and a great job by you guys over at Pro Football Focus all during the draft.
Absolutely. Thanks. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and thanks for joining us, man. Let's dive in right into the Giants class, and we'll start from the backside because we just had Adam Biznawati's offensive line coach from Pitt on with us. He gave us a little insight as to his ability, personality, things of that nature. Obviously, a sixth-round pick, a developmental player. What did Pro Football Focus see from him at the college level?
Yeah, he like you say, he's a developmental guy. He's had some pretty good grading for us at times. He's good, big, strong guy, good at controlling defenders. Once he actually locks onto a guy, it's very difficult for him to shed him and then get rid of him, get him off that block. I think he's a really good guy on the play side of zone schemes. I think he's kind of moves guys at the point of attack, opens up a lot of space in the run game that way. And really earned himself a huge percentage of kind of positively graded blocks. You know, sometimes run blocking is as much about not getting beat as it is anything else, but he's a guy that really generates movement with the strength and the power that he has on the front side of plays when he is the intended point of attack. So I think he's an intriguing guy. There's a lot of tools to work with and a guy that could potentially turn into something down the road.
I want to follow up on him real quick, Sam. Do you think his switching of schemes during the course of his career at Pitt hurt him or helped him? Hurt him in that he had to learn different techniques maybe halfway through his career, or did it help him in that it's going to give him more experience and more versatility now he's heading to the pro level?
Yeah, I think it probably helped him overall because it does give him more skills, and it puts him in a scheme, I think, that was closer to what NFL teams are running a lot nowadays, which is these zone plays that a lot of teams like to work into their run system. So I think it's probably an overall win, even though it affected him negatively in terms of grading early on when he's switching the schemes.
Well, speaking of switching schemes, maybe perhaps he's going to have an opportunity to play a few different positions depending on where the Giants put him, Sam. And you talked about his run blocking, but, you know, there's talk about maybe he can play guard, perhaps be moved to right tackle. He solely played left tackle. If you look at his 4 years at Pitt, from what you've seen on film, does he have the characteristics that perhaps allow him to transition to other spots?
I think he's really intriguing as a right tackle. Like those abilities that we talked about, the power in the run game, the ability to really open up points of attack when he's the first guy on point there, I think that really lends itself to being a right tackle in the NFL. The question is going to be whether he has the pass-blocking skills to succeed at right tackle at the next level, because it's not a place that you can hide guys with poor pass protection anymore the way you used to be able to. You know, guys playing right tackle in today's NFL have got to go up against Von Miller. They've got to go up against Khalil Mack. They've got to go up against Cameron Wake. They've got to face a who's who of outstanding pass rushers. So you need to be able to hold up in that regard, and I think that's going to be his question mark.
Well, no, I was just going to follow up with that, Sam. I'm glad you pointed that out because, you know, on this program we take so many phone calls, and, you know, a lot of fans were throwing out the idea if Ereck Flowers is struggling a bit at left tackle, the easiest thing is to move him to right. But as you mentioned, you can't hide offensive linemen. I mean, if there are flaws, you have to work out the kinks no matter where you put them, on the left side or the right side, because what defenses are doing now is they're moving their elite pass rushers to both sides, or most teams have two elite pass rushers, Sam, where you have a challenge on the left and the right side, and you don't have it easy no matter where you look at it.
Yeah, and even if they don't, there's plenty of elite pass rushers that only play on that right side of the offensive line, the left side of the defense. So there's no way, like you say, there's nowhere to hide those guys. A guy that can't hold up in pass protection on the left side of the NFL is not any more able to hold up on the right side. The only difference is that the quarterback's probably going to see them coming more often than not. So it's really not a place you can hide. A guy that can't pass protect a tackle at the NFL level is a guard at best. You know, he's not a guy that you can just hide on the right side of the line.
Sam, I'm going to ask you real quick, just to stay on the offensive line. Jerry Reese said the other day on what Mike Francesa, that the Giants have come to terms with Chad Wheeler, the offensive lineman out of USC. And frankly, a lot of the places I've looked at talking about offensive linemen liked Wheeler more than they liked Biznawati. Do you guys agree with that at Pro Football Focus?
I don't know if we agree with that. I think that they're comparable in certain areas. I think in pass protection, there's not much in it. Wheeler may be a slightly better or a slightly more accomplished pass blocker, but I don't think he's nearly as good as a run blocker, and certainly wasn't last year, where he took a really bad step backwards in terms of run blocking. Had a very negative grade for us over the course of the season in that area. So I don't think there's much in it, but I don't think he's demonstrably superior.
Well, talking with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus as we're going over the Giants draft class. Let's stay in the trenches, but let's move to the defensive line. And they also addressed that in the draft, Sam, in terms of Dalvin Tomlinson out of Alabama, who they got in the second round. And, you know, if you monitor the Giants, this is a continuous trend. They tend to find in the second round replacements for starters that they lose in free agency. It happened with Linval Joseph. Now they lost Jonathan Hankins, and it looks like maybe Tomlinson is in line to replace him. I don't know how much analysis you've done, but part one would be, how close is Tomlinson perhaps to what Hankins brought to the table for the Giants, and how do you think he'll fit in with Damon Snacks Harrison?
Well, what's really interesting is that Jonathan Hankins was actually our player comp that we used for Dalvin Tomlinson in the draft guide. So from that point of view, he's a spot-on match in terms of exactly that type of player, a really strong run defender, a guy that has shown the ability to get after the passer a little bit. He's got some pass rush moves to him, but I think is only really going to excel in that area as a nose tackle, as a guy whose primary function is run defense. So I think the issue with replacing him is probably the same issue that Hankins ran into, which is Snacks is your nose tackle, and any other defensive tackle for the Giants is going to have to ply his trade primarily at three technique, which I don't think suited Hankins, and I don't think it really suits Dalvin Tomlinson either. So I think he has potential maybe to succeed in that spot the way, you know, Hankins had shown flashes that he could do that, but it didn't really work out for him over the season. I think it's a big ask for Tomlinson to develop that part of his game, and I don't think it wouldn't be the most natural fit for where he would slot.
So I guess what you're looking at then, Sam, potentially when you're looking at how you would want to use him, is that he would be almost a first and second down or run situation three technique, and then when you get into second or third and long and you want to put a little pass rush in there, the Giants could look at moving one of their ends inside to maybe give a little bit more pass pressure.
Yeah, and if it's still a four-man line when you're in obvious pass situations, then maybe Harrison comes off the field and he becomes the kind of pass-rushing nose tackle.
Yeah, that's smart.
It's interesting. And, you know, when you look at when you look at Joseph and Hankins, Sam, I mean, when they came out of college, they didn't have a lot of sacks similar to Tomlinson. So it was a mystery whether or not they were going to boost the Giants' pass rush as well. I mean, that's why I think there's so many similarities between Tomlinson and the previous two that man that position, because they were really known as run stoppers as opposed to guys that were going to necessarily push the pocket forward and upgrade in terms of the sack totals.
Yeah, and I think the way they win in terms of pass rushing at the NFL level is from that kind of nose tackle spot where you're working moves on a center or on a guard one-on-one directly in front of the quarterback, and you're basically just overwhelming them, you know, as opposed to a three-tech where you're still asking those guys to win with speed and almost run a bit of an edge-rushing kind of arc just a little bit further out from the pocket.
You know, and I want to stick on the defensive line. I want to go to the Giants' fifth-round pick now. And, you know, Jerry Reese, when he spoke about Avery Moss after the draft, said he's a true defensive end. And what I kind of gleaned from that comment was that he's actually, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 270 pounds. He's not one of these, you know, oversized outside linebackers. What did you see from him? Is he more of an all-around end? Do you see him more of a pass rusher? How do you see his skill set converting to the NFL as a 4-3 D end?
Yeah, well, this is actually a guy who's really one of our unknowns because, you know, PFF, we do every FBS game, and we don't delve into the FCS unless guys play an FBS program. And for 3 years, they haven't played anybody that we've graded. So we're going to be interested to see him for the first time in the NFL. He's a guy we don't have data on at the moment.
Yeah, you know, and he started at Nebraska, but that was before you guys started gathering your college data, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to see what happens with him. Let's stick then with the Giants draft. We're joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. And, you know, sticking with one of the later round picks, Wayne Gallman, I thought was an interesting pick at running back from Clemson. And to me, I thought if they drafted a running back, it would be more of a power between the tackles type of back. And not that Gallman can't do that, but I feel like he almost has kind of that, you know, Paul Perkins jump cut skill too, where those guys do have a bit of an overlapping skill set.
Yeah, I think that's exactly – I think you hit on the move that is his go-to, the jump cut. I think that's exactly what he does, and he's used it pretty well over the past couple of years to really rack up a huge amount of broken tackles. You know, he's able to make guys miss in a little bit of space and leave guys grasping at air, particularly if he makes it through to the second level. He runs a little bit upright at times, which can cause him to get kind of drilled in the hole by linebackers and really struggles to break contact in a way some other running backs can. You know, he tends to square himself up to some shots and doesn't generate as much yards after contact as he could. But if he does get himself in a bit of space, he's able to make guys miss with that quick jump cut and really turn small, modest gains into bigger ones.
Well, Sam, he's had a knack for finding the end zone in terms of his total touchdowns, but it seems as if from what you're describing, if the Giants envision maybe having a 1-2 punch with Perkins and Gallman, you're not getting much variety with the two. Is that a fair assumption where he can't really be that goal line bigger back to complement and provide a bit of a change of pace to Perkins?
Yeah, I think they're similar kinds of backs, and I think they both fit what the Giants appear to be trying to do, which is to run more side to side and use more of this this outside perimeter stuff and try and get these guys into space. That way, they are going to need to figure out a backup plan for those ugly hard yards and the third and one and the stuff that goes straight up the middle. Because you know, I think both those guys can do that, but neither of them are specialists. Neither of them are going to excel in that area.
How is his pass protection and receiving ability, Sam?
His pass protection has actually been a little bit of a concern over his career. Actually, he's given up a significant amount of pressure in each of the past three seasons we've graded. The past 2 years, he hasn't actually given up a sack or a hit, but I think a large part of that is his quarterback being able to take off and actually make something of those plays. But
yeah,
He allowed 11 pressures last year, 7 the year before that, and 8 the year before that, which are pretty big numbers for a back. You know, a really good back will allow significantly fewer than 5 over the course of the year. So I think it's an issue and something he does need to try and tighten up if he's going to be on the field doing that for the Giants.
How about his skills as a receiver catching the football?
That, I think, it's better than his pass protection. But again, I don't think it's a real strength of his. I think this is a guy that is best carrying the ball on the ground. I think he can make plays in the pass game, but it's not something that he's been, used particularly heavily in at Clemson. I think he's only had, I don't think he's had more than 30 targets in any of the past 3 years. But it's also something that he hasn't exactly demanded more targets with. He hasn't taken those plays and made anything dramatic out of them. So I don't think the pass game is the thing that he's there for.
Well, I think your observations are key, Sam, in terms of his potential as a receiver and a pass protector, because when he spoke to the media, one of the things that he pointed out was, and I'm curious from what you've seen on film, that they didn't phase him out this season, but it seemed as if the offense was really built around Deshaun Watson, much more so than the ground game, because his carries did go down in 2016 to 2015. So it seems as if he was called upon to serve more as a pass protector this final year, maybe more so than in previous years when they showcased the run a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely swung a little bit in terms of how much they put the ball in the air, and that obviously impacted him and put him on the field more for obvious passing situations where he wasn't in the past. And like I say, it's not really a strength. I mean, he was pass blocking in almost 200 snaps this past season, which is a huge number for a running back. Usually those guys are under 100, but the season before that he was up at almost 200 as well, 191. So this is a guy that has a lot of experience pass blocking. He's just never shown to be particularly good at it.
I want to switch over to Davis Webb. We're joined by Sam Monson, of course, Pro Football Focus. They do a tremendous job covering the college prospects heading into the National Football League. And Sam, Davis Webb is interesting. Let's separate the mental from the physical first and start with his physical traits. Physically as a quarterback, simply his tools, what do you see?
Well, that's his selling point. You know, this is a guy that's a big quarterback. He's got the perfect stature, 6'5", 230. You know, has the huge arm. From a tool standpoint, from a physical raw attribute standpoint, he's exactly what everybody's looking for in terms of a quarterback. And I think that's why there was a lot of intrigue in him as a prospect and guys kind of falling in love with the potential of what he could do. And we actually saw some good games from him to start this season, and then things kind of ran themselves off the tracks around about week six. He just disappeared and never came back to the performance we'd seen at the start of the year.
How so? Where did he drop off?
Just across the board. He seemed to hit a bad patch at the Oregon State game. Was a disaster for him. It was his worst game of the season. He had a terrible performance in that game, and it never really improved. That was a 50% completion game. Didn't throw a touchdown, threw a pick. It was just ugly stuff, and I don't know whether that kind of put him in a funk for the rest of the year, but we never saw him get back to the kind of performances that he'd begun the year with, which I think is something that, you know, a team would at least want to ask him when they got around to those interviews, which I'm sure the Giants did.
One of the biggest questions when you try to project where a quarterback is going to wind up when it comes to the NFL is the transition in the system. And when you look at the offense that Cal ran compared to now what he's going to be asked to do with the Giants, I mean, how big of a transition do you think that's going to be for him, Sam?
It's a big transition. I mean, we saw Jared Goff last year struggle badly with it, and it's the same kind of story. I think it'll be an easier transition to this Giants offense than it was for the Rams, which were, you know, under Jeff Fisher, that was a much more old-school NFL-style offense that's kind of buried in the mid-2000s. I think this Giants offense is at least a little more contemporary, and it should be a closer match to the stuff that he's been doing at Cal. But it's still a significant transition. You know, it is for all these guys that run a serious, dedicated, spread kind of system, whether it's quarterbacks, offensive linemen, even running backs and receivers. It's a big switch to the NFL when you're running now a far more varied and complete offense.
Yeah, I want to delve into that a little bit deeper, Sam, because I think, you know, when you look at these quarterbacks, you know, you can have a guy with a great arm and you can have a guy with all the physical attributes, but if he can't read defenses and see defenses, and when I say that, I mean sometimes I think things move so fast for some of these quarterbacks, there might be guys open, but they're just, you know, can't process the information fast enough to see him open and get him the ball. How is he, do you think, at processing the information under fire in the pocket when things are moving around? Is he seeing what's there, or does he oftentimes make some mistakes because he's not seeing what's out there?
There's some mistakes there, but the other thing is that it's the way these offenses are designed. They're almost kind of crafted to take the thinking out of the position. You know, you give a quarterback some reads to make pre-snap, and it almost predetermines where the ball is going to go unless something comes up in the second immediately after the snap. That's where you're going with it. So these guys from these spread offenses, you know, their average time to throw is always way quicker than you'll find from an NFL quarterback because the ball is just gone. It's, you know, 62/3 essentially of his pass attempts were out before 2.5 seconds, which is way up on what you'll see from an NFL quarterback, which are typically kind of in the 50s there. And it's just, it's designed so these guys don't have to drop back and take a full field read and work through a three-guy progression, you know, and find the open guy. It's a simplified system so that it can have success against college defenses where the wide hash marks give you more space to play with and, you know, predetermine a lot more. So I think that's the biggest thing for these guys. Not that they can't do this stuff, it's that they just haven't done that much of it in college.
Well, and based on what you just said, Sam, and from what I've seen and from what I've read, within the offense that he ran at Cal, you know, a lot of his passes, because he was getting rid of it so quickly, are within about a 5-yard radius we're talking about. Now, I know that you alluded to he's got a strong arm, he's got the size, but, you know, what was the disparity like between the accuracy in terms of the short yardage passes versus, you know, his targets when he was looking down the field, which is probably what he's going to be asked to do more on the NFL level?
Yeah, I think accuracy for him is a pretty good I think he's pretty good across the board. He had a decent accuracy percentage on deep passes, had an NFL passer rating of basically 100 when he was going deep. Now, some of that's going to be Pac-12 defenses not exactly being the toughest things in the world to go deep against. But, you know, I think generally his accuracy has been fine, whether it's on short stuff, whether it's deep and intermediate passes. I think, again, that fits into his the physical tools and the stuff that he has to work from is solid across the board.
Now, I know you mentioned he gets rid of the ball so quick, so maybe it's hard to answer this question, but how did he deal with pressure generally? Is he one of these guys that'll see the pressure and kind of move out of the pocket prematurely? Will he stand in there, deliver a throw, take a hit? How did he handle pressure?
Yeah, I think he's done all right when he's been under pressure. one interesting quirk about him as opposed to Jared Goff the year before, he didn't face nearly as much pressure as Goff did. We got to see a lot of Jared Goff under pressure because that Kyle offensive line was terrible. In addition to the passes getting out quickly, it improved a lot with Davis Webb at quarterback, and he wasn't pressured nearly as much. But I think he did pretty well when he was. His passer rating dropped, which is what you expect from all quarterbacks. But it didn't go in the tank the way some guys did. It dropped from over 100 to, you know, just below 70, which is about an average level of kind of negative impact for a guy that's pressured. But his grade was still okay. He still threw twice as many touchdowns to interceptions when he was pressured. So far, the signs are that he does okay under pressure.
Talking with Sam Monson for Pro Football Focus. Unlike Davis Webb, I think it's safe to say Evan Engram will have a bigger impact immediately on the Giants' offense
this
year.
You hope so, at least.
Yes, at least. We hope so, indeed, he being their first-round pick. And, Sam, I want to throw out something that our colleague Paul Dottino threw out on yesterday's program based on how maybe the Giants envision utilizing Evan Engram and whether or not you see a similar comparison. JerMichael Finley comes to mind in terms of Ben McAdoo's time with the Green Bay Packers and how Green Bay utilized him. How much do you see similarities between perhaps JerMichael Finley and Evan Engram, and maybe this is more of a transition that Ben McAdoo wants to employ those Green Bay philosophies here in New York?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Evan Engram is, he's really just a big slot receiver. I actually liken him a little bit to the way the Saints used to use Marcus Colston, which was kind of as a tight end slot receiver hybrid, you know, a guy that will work the middle of the field and really just work as a pass receiver. He's not there to block. And I think Engram is the same story. If you need him to block in line, you're just setting the guy up for failure. This is a movable weapon in the passing game. He's a guy that can become a matchup problem for a defense. And you basically just need to treat him that way as an offensive player and use him across the middle of the field, both in the slot, and you can line him up at tight end and release him that way. But his threat is as a passing guy. To use him as an inline blocker, I think, is going to cause problems.
How much of a transition will it be for Evan, Sam, going from college to the pros in terms of the system? How advanced was Ole Miss's passing game? Did he run a full route tree? How advanced were the route combinations? Did he have to read defensive backs? What is that transition going to be like for him, and how much is he going to have to learn now getting to a West Coast-style offense that the Giants run?
Yeah, I think that's actually a relatively good transition. I think they asked him to do a lot of stuff. They ran him a pretty decent route tree. The only issue may be if they want to try and transition him completely in terms of alignment to this inline kind of positioning, whereas at Ole Miss it was a lot from the slot. They really didn't ask him to line up as a traditional tight end all that much. He was just asked to go out there and be this matchup problem. I mean, I think that the Giants would be best served basically trying to copy that blueprint with how to deploy him against NFL defenses.
Well, and with that being said, Sam, they brought in Rhett Ellison in free agency, and his MO is he's known for being a blocker. He only has 51 receptions over the course of his career. So, you know, how much do you think he's a compliment, Evan Engram, to the fact that they brought in a pretty much sole blocker in free agency?
Yeah, I think that does stand in his favor. I think that's definitely a good point, that Ellison would be the primary blocker. It allows Engram to be this receiving weapon. What's interesting about Ellison is that he may be best as a fullback. The Vikings deployed him as both a fullback and a tight end over his career there, and his best season was that first year in Minnesota back in 2012, where he really did just play fullback. And the more they transitioned him away from that and moved him to tight end, the less effective he became. So that'll be interesting to see if the Giants want to use him, kind of split him between those two roles as a tight end and a fullback and make use of his experience in both, or if they're just going to deploy him as the blocking tight end in kind of two tight end sets.
See, now this is why I love having the Pro Football Focus guys on, because they can take what they watched in college. They also know the NFL teams. They can kind of try to figure out fits here, which is why I like it. How much, Sam, do you think Evan Engram can help neutralize what the Giants offense saw last year from opposing defenses, where they would kind of split those two deep safeties kind of outside the hash marks, try to take away the deep ball to Beckham, and the Giants didn't have anybody to really challenge deep down the middle of the field. How much do you think Ingram can help open things up down the field a little bit more with that speed down the seam and down the middle?
Yeah, a huge amount, I think. I mean, this is a guy that has, like I say, he was a big slot receiver as opposed to a traditional tight end. So that makes him even more dangerous than any conventional receiving tight end, because this is a guy that has already worked the middle of the field really well. He's basically like a wide receiver out there, but he's a wide receiver that will overwhelm defensive backs and kind of out-muscle smaller corners that you might want to put on him. So I think he's absolutely tailor-made to attack that kind of defense. He's able to either go deep on those kind of passes, or he's able to catch stuff short over the middle and turn up field and make yards after the catch and beat people with strength and size that way.
The one name that was constantly thrown out after the Giants drafted him was Jordan Reed, and clearly he's also within the division for the Washington Redskins. Do you see similarities between Reed and what Evan Ingram can bring to the table, or is that a little bit too high in terms of expectations early on?
Well, that's where they want him to get to. I think it's a good target to set. You know, that's the guy the Giants want Evan Ingram to be able to turn into, a guy that can work the middle of the field, that has some real athletic ability, not just in terms of making spectacular catches, but in terms of being able to outrun these linebackers and bigger guys over the middle of the field, and also make things happen after the catch. So I think it is a lofty goal to set, but I think it's exactly the one they want to be putting on him.
We're joined by Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. Sam, final one for me on Ingram. Now I want to get a couple quick questions, if you have the time, to go around the league a little bit on what else happened in the draft. A lot of Giant fans were disappointed. They had heard a lot about David Njoku, and they have asked as many questions. Well, why would you pick Evan Ingram over Njoku? I know you have Njoku graded a little bit higher than Ingram, but what are some of the things that you think Ingram does better than Njoku, and what are some of the things you think Njoku does better than Ingram?
Yeah, that Njoku's the guy that I picked the Giants to take.
That's right.
That's who they would snag if they were going to go for that athletic tight end over the middle. I think Ingram has a little bit more kind of short area quickness and wiggle about him that you can – he's a little bit more of a wide receiver as opposed to just a traditional receiving tight end, which is Njoku. I think they're not dissimilar players. I just think it's a case of which, you know, what you exactly want that guy to be able to do. And I think Ingram is a good fit for what we talked about in terms of targeting that specific shell of defense that they've been seeing a lot of. I think Njoku would do that pretty well as well. But it's obviously just a stylistic thing that the Giants have decided Ingram is the better fit for that.
Well, in terms of looking at the NFC East, and I know I alluded to Jordan Reed, but the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Eagles, I mean, it seemed to be a theme, Sam, in the draft that, you know, all three of those teams really looked to bolster their defense, which I don't really think you can blame, considering all three defenses, for the most part, struggled in various areas in 2016. What did you think about overall the NFC East and how perhaps the three other teams helped themselves, especially from a defensive standpoint?
Yeah, I think certainly the Cowboys and the Eagles, I think, had really good drafts. I liked what they did and how they went after it. And I liked from the Redskins, that first pick of getting Jonathan Allen at 17 is potentially one of the steals of the entire draft. You know, he was a guy that we had graded exceptionally well. And I know there's athleticism concerns and injury concerns with his arthritic shoulders and all that kind of stuff. But from what we've seen in terms of his on-field dominance, he is one of the top two, three players in this entire draft, and they got him midway through the first round. So, yeah, I think all three of these teams have loaded up on defense and really tried to patch up and just maintain pace in the arms race that is this division. You know, there's a lot of good offenses there, and so far the rest of them have all struggled to kind of contend with the various offenses. So I think I like what all the division sides have done in the draft.
Sam, final one for me. Putting aside the obvious ones, you know, Dalvin Cook with the off-the-field stuff, Reuben Foster with the off-the-field stuff, and just from on-the-field perspective, anyone in particular, you know, you can give me one, two, or three guys you think were overdrafted, and any one, two, or three guys you think were really underdrafted over the course of the 3 days?
Yeah, I think all the quarterbacks really at the first round were overdrafted. I understand why they were overdrafted, because just the way the league is, that if you don't have a quarterback, you really need to go up and get one and basically pay whatever it takes to snag one. But, you know, Kansas City moving as far as they did to get Patrick Mahomes, who is a complete and total project, you know, he's in a good situation because he won't need to start year one. But I don't think he could start year one if they needed him to. Deshaun Watson, a similar kind of story. And obviously Trubisky up at the top with Chicago jumping one spot to secure him. I think all the quarterbacks were kind of overdrafted. And then I think really it's difficult to know how much of the slips on draft day are due to off-field things or medical concerns that we don't have a complete picture of. But all of the guys that I think had big slides on that first day, so Jonathan Allen, Reuben Foster, who I think on the field again is one of the top two or three players in this entire draft. The 49ers were apparently reportedly happy to take him at number three overall and ended up getting him at 31. I think that could prove to be an absolute steal as well.
Yeah, especially with them getting Solomon Thomas on top of Reuben Foster. I mean, you essentially get two top 10 picks, arguably, in the first round. So,
and by the way, you pick up like three third-round picks in addition to that, too. Not a too bad of a debut from John Lynch.
Absolutely. For a guy that had no previous front office experience, I don't think the Niners are complaining. Well, Sam, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. You really broke down the Giants class as well as the NFL landscape. I'm sure our listeners appreciate it, but thanks again for all the hard work that you've done.
And Sam, by the way, if you want to tell our listeners where they can find your stuff and everything or Pro Football Focus, let them rip.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at PFF_Sam, profootballfocus.com. We'll get you to the website. I think we are giving Draft Pass right now at a significant discount that you can find on the website if you want to check out all the information on all your team's picks.
Sam, great stuff. We really appreciate the time. And, of course, we'll talk to you as we get closer to the season. And we actually just talk about NFL players again instead of talking about college players for the last 3 months. Thanks a lot, my man.
Yeah, thanks, Sam.
Anytime.
Sam Monson from across the Atlantic doing a great job as always. Love having Sam on during the draft process. He does a fantastic job.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's always nice now that you have a draft class and somebody who's also knowledgeable about the guys that are currently on the roster to see how things will mesh and how things will work, because that's now where the discussion goes. We've broken down all of these young prospects. Now,
how do they play for the Giants?
Correct, exactly. How do they mix it? It's a big thing.
Yeah, and look, these teams are going to analyze all these guys differently based on how they're going to fit with their teams, and now we actually know what teams they're going to have to fit in, which is when it starts getting a little more interesting. All right, folks, we're going to take your calls the rest of the way at 201-939-4513. I want to get as many people in as possible, so I'm not going to hang up on you, but I'm also going to try to move this along a little bit, so don't be offended.
Which means he is going to hang up on you.
No. I just wanted to get to their points quickly. Ralph in Pennsylvania and Abdul have been holding the longest. Let's go to Ralph first. Thanks for holding throughout that show, Ralph. You got John and Lance here in East Rutherford. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing great. What's on your mind today, man?
Hey, good job on the interview, by the way. You guys do a good job.
Thank you.
On the interview, stuff like that. I just wanted to say, on the draft, I was hoping that the Giants took a linebacker, a cornerback, or offensive lineman, but, you know, things don't always go the way you want, and hopefully the draft class turns out to be great. Other than that, you know, that's all I got to say about the draft class. The undrafted free agents, I was hoping they brought in a couple linebackers to put some depth there and hopefully maybe get a potential starter, a sleeper starter. But other than that, I think the Giants are doing pretty good. I also want to know, what do you guys think about maybe even trying to pick somebody up in free agency or doing anything in that regard there, trying to upgrade the roster? And who would probably be the free agent prospects you got to be looking at maybe to bring in? Is there any linebackers out there maybe that could start, or any cornerbacks still on the market that would be decent backup cornerbacks on the roster?
Ralph,
your answer's on the line.
Awesome.
Yeah, we got it, Ralph. Appreciate
thanks for the
thanks.
Call, pal. You know, the free agency period has kind of gone now. There are still some guys left. I know LeGarrette Blount's name has been thrown out there a lot, and would have shocked me if the Giants looked at a short yardage back to, you know, complement what they have in the roster. It wouldn't shock me, Lance. I don't think it would shock you either. But I mean, I don't think you're going to have any more significant additions until more guys start getting cut loose, and you might have a few guys get cut loose in the next week or two based on who teams
could
drafted.
Very well, yeah.
But I think the next period is probably going to be the first set of training camp cuts, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that's when, obviously, the market will change drastically. And also, remember, there's a lot of veterans that are still out there on the market. They just don't want to be here for spring workouts. So, you know, the old trick, they wait to sign before training camp.
How dare you accuse them of such behavior, Lance
Meadow? I think
there's
a lot. Well, here, I'll give you one. Anquan Boldin. He's going to be signed, but he's not going to sign with a team until the end of July, early August. I can guarantee that.
I wonder if Leon Hall is going to be the same way.
Well, and that was the name I was just going to bring up, that's an example where the Giants did bring in a free agent late, and I could see something similar like that happening if somebody gets cut or they want to bring in somebody for competition. But I don't know. I would agree with you there. I don't think we're going to see maybe a huge flash of a name of some sort in the spring period.
Well, no one's huge just left.
Correct. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the names because the caller threw out linebackers, and I'm just perusing some of the names, and I'm looking, a lot of these names have retired since.
I mean, Kelvin Shepard's still out there, a guy that played for the Giants
Shepard,
last year.
Shepard, who has familiarity.
But I think B.J. Goodson's the guy they want to give a shot
rather
to,
give the reps. And here's the other thing. If you're going to give the reps to a specific player, I'd rather give the young player the reps in the spring when you have an opportunity to truly evaluate. And then if you want to bring in more competition because you're like, you know what, I didn't really see enough out of the spring, we need a veteran to push, then I could see there being value to bring in the veteran free agent.
Abdul Minnesota, he's up next. He's on line four. He's been holding the longest. What's up, Abdul?
Hey, guys. What's up? How you guys been?
Good to hear from you, man. What's up?
Good. So I was thinking about this draft. This was like such a typical Reese draft. You know, when it comes down to it, he will always pick either a defensive end or a tackle or wide receiver in the first or second round pick. And that's what he does.
Well, Abdul, it's funny. You know, you say that, and my argument, counter argument would be, well, they haven't picked a tight end in the first round since Jeremy Shockey. But if you want to make the argument that Evan Engram is more of a receiver offensive weapon than a tight end, then yes, you have that.
Exactly.
Defensive tackle. Yes, I agree with you. That's fair.
Right. Third pick, he always picks this random weird, like, I'm smarter than anyone in the room, like, player. And David Webb, right? And then after that, he picks an O-line man because, like, he treats the O-line like the, you know, redheaded stepchild. And that's what we have, you know, the last few picks. And it's such a typical, you know, it's just a typical draft. Like, I don't hate it. I think he did okay. I think he got good players, but it was so typical of him, you know, the way it went down.
Hey, and Abdul, the most important thing, Lance Meadow can still say the Giants haven't drafted a linebacker since 1984.
I told you. And you're going to hear it for at least another season, by the way.
Exactly. Like I think someone mentioned that Reese wants to go 7-on-7. Like, he wants to get rid of that position. Like, for some reason, he just does not. He just doesn't think it's important, and I don't know what it is.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I don't think it's so much of that. I mean, we talk about this on the show a lot. How many teams use three linebackers every single down
within
the structure of their defense?
Some teams are down to one because they play three or four safeties.
So, I mean, that's a theme in the NFL, Abdul. I don't think it's the philosophy of the Giants. I think it's the evolution of the game. Why are you going to invest a high draft pick in a guy that's not going to be on the field?
And, Abdul, when's the last time you heard somebody say, boy, you know what this draft is really deep in? Linebackers. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Remember yesterday, I think Shakes called, and talking about the importance of the running game. And someone pulled out how every good team has a running game, has a balance. Every good defense.
Not the Packers. Not the Packers. The Packers don't run the ball. They've had one of the best offenses in football and been in the playoffs year in, year out.
But they won the Super Bowl, they had a running game with James Starks.
Sure, that's true.
They have outliers, I'm saying. But if you look at, look at the good teams from last year, the Raiders, the Cowboys.
Well, I threw the numbers out yesterday,
The Raiders' run game wasn't. It was average.
It was up there.
It was average.
Murray Washington. Tennessee had a good running game.
Yesterday's show, someone pulled up stats.
I did. Okay. No, I remember. I brought him up. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about, Abdul. I was making the correlation between the top 10 rushing attacks in the NFL last season and where they then ranked in scoring offense.
Yards per game, you looked at?
No, not yards. Scoring. Points per game.
How did you judge the top 10 rushing attacks?
Yes, yards per game on the ground. Correct. And then I wanted to see, because we were trying to determine, obviously the Giants want to improve in terms of points per game.
Yes.
And I was curious whether or not if you have a strong rushing attack, does that mean you're finishing the majority of your drives? And there was that correlation. Cowboys, the Raiders, for example, were up there in rushing yards per game, and then they were up there in scoring. New England was another team where you made that correlation. Even Tennessee, which just missed out on the playoffs, was a top unit rushing, and they were also top 15 in terms of scoring offense, which you wouldn't necessarily assume because they didn't have a great passing game. So that is a connection. So I'm with you there, Abdul.
Okay.
Yeah.
And every year since 1984, whether it's people say the Giants defense, we need linebackers because we can't cover the tight end. Every year, I'm sure every tight end circles the Giants game because he knows he's making his contract that
game. You know, Abdul, here's the thing, though. You know what? Tight ends don't cover – I mean, linebackers don't cover tight ends as much anymore. That's almost a safety thing, to be honest with you. You don't – it basically – if an offense sees a linebacker on a tight end, unless it's Luke Kuechly or Sean Lee, they're going to put a big red circle around that tight end and say, yo, we're going to go attack that linebacker. You know, they have safeties now that they draft specifically – two cover linebackers. For example, when Dallas takes on the Redskins, they line up Byron Jones right on Jordan Reed, and they say you're covering him the entire game. Now, it didn't work out too well in the playoffs when Byron Jones let the Packers tight end, I forget his name, catch the
Jared
ball on
Cook.
The sideline, Jared Cook,
with the Raiders
catch the
now.
Ball for that big first down to set the game-winning field goal. But I think that's more of a safety job now than it is a linebacker job, which, by
that's
the
fair.
Way, goes back to Lance's original point, why linebackers aren't on the field as much, because they can't be trusted to guard. Imagine a linebacker on Evan Ingram?
No.
It's death. Yeah. It's
He'll
death.
Run right by him. He'll juke him, and then this guy will be losing his shoes.
Most tight ends don't run 4-4 either, by the way.
You know what, though? More and more tight ends in the NFL are much more receivers than they are blockers.
Maybe like Paul, I'm stuck in, 1980. I'm 46 years old, so maybe I'm stuck in the, and I played linebacker when I was younger too, so maybe that also.
Well, you played when the linebacker was on the field for three downs.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the difference of doing.
I was just looking at it, and this draft was like, this is just a typical Reese draft. And I said, I'm not complaining. I think we got some good players.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward for the season. But I just laughed when I looked at it. Cause I'm like, every year he just drafts D linemen and receivers. That's his favorite two positions to draft. Anyway, guys, thanks
Abdul.
I appreciate the call, man.
And you're right. You know what? I'm looking at this. The only teams that were really good rushing the football and were not good offensively, it was the Bills, surprisingly, averaged 25 points per game.
Correct.
They were the top rushing team in the league. The Niners were an outlier. They were fourth.
They were the exception, correct.
They were an outlier there. But you're right. You got the Bills, the Cowboys, the Titans. The Falcons obviously were monsters. The Raiders and the Patriots were the top seven rushing teams in the league. Every one of those teams averaged more than 23 points per game. Yeah.
Well,
can't argue with it.
My hypothesis?
I like to confirm.
Well, I was going to say, you had to. I mean.
Though, in fairness, Texans were eighth in rushing, and their offense was one of the worst in football.
Well, of course, there's going to be exceptions.
But the Dolphins at 9 and the Panthers at 10 weren't great offensively. So, I mean, and the Jets were 12. So, at the very top, yes. But when you get into that middle third,
you're going to have varied results. But I think that, for the most part, there was certainly a trend that the teams that were in that top seven ballpark had done pretty well in terms of points per game.
Yeah, that's fair.
And also ultimately made the playoffs. So, yes, you're right. Nobody's saying that you have to have a top 10 rushing unit to make the playoffs and go on. Remember, the year that the Giants won the Super Bowl, they were dead last during the course of the regular season.
In fact, why don't we...
So it can be done, but
let's do this exercise.
You can't expect
instead,
that to work all the time.
Why don't we look at the bottom of the rushing offense and see how many of those teams make the playoffs? Why don't we play
That's
that
fair.
Game?
Yeah, we
let's
can do that. Absolutely.
Real quick. And I know we got callers on Dominic's mad because he knows we got some meatballs and ravioli in there that we got to get to.
Oh, you already checked out the cafeteria?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Vikings, the Rams, the Lions. The Lions were in. The Giants were in at 29. The Ravens, the Broncos, the Chargers, the Seahawks, the Bucks. So you had a bunch of teams around 500, slightly below. All right, I'll get back
to
the
calls. But notice none of those teams you mentioned also went pretty far in the postseason as well.
That's true, and none of them scored more than 23 points per game except for the Chargers at 26 and then the Colts at 23.
And none of those teams made the playoffs.
Correct. Andre of Baltimore, he's up next. What's up, Dre?
Doing.
What's up, man?
All right, I'll make it quick. Everybody is pretty much entitled to their opinion. I've heard some of the callers talk about linebackers, whatever. Let's face the facts. We spent $200 million last season on our defense. Our defense is top five in almost every statistical category.
Yes, sir.
Almost every statistical category. So, in my opinion, I think we addressed tight end. We have the wide receiver core. Let's face facts. Four rings In every four rings that we have, our running game helped us achieve that Super Bowl. We need to address the running game. We need to make a splash on the offensive line. We need to make a splash at the running back position. And my real question is, how come this kid, the Gallman, that we got in the fourth pick, national championship, starting tailback, how come he didn't get the hype from the Mayocks of the world and all the top-notch recruits of the world? How did he slip to us in the fourth round, fourth pick, fourth round, you know? But I just think that we need to address our running game and let the chips fall where they may. I disagree with the last caller. Jerry Reese is a great GM, makes great decisions. You look at his draft picks for the past few seasons, he's put together some pretty good drafts. So I think we need to make a splash in the at the running back position, and that's just, you know, my thoughts.
Well, Dre, I'll address your first question about how does somebody like Gallman maybe fall under the radar and go to the fourth round. And I don't know if you had been listening to our interview when we were talking to Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus, but I brought up the point that, I mean, Watson was the true star of the Clemson offense this past season. They were much more pass-happy than they were in terms of the ground game. And, you know, that's part of whether or not your stock falls and rises. You go to LSU. LSU did not have a passing game. Leonard Fournette was their offense. So that's why he obviously got a little bit more play. So I think that's part of the rationale why maybe Gallman wasn't as high in the rankings as some of the other running backs. You have to see how they were utilized within the offense. And, you know, as far as going after another running back, I mean, how many more running backs do you need on this roster? People keep throwing that out, and they say, you know, well, maybe there's no goal line back, and I get that. But I'm very curious to first see how these guys are being utilized in the spring, what type of roles they carve out before perhaps everybody's saying there's a need for another back brought into the mix.
And I've said this to Paul before, and I hate to do it because it bursts his bubble. As much as he wants to be trenches and pound the ball and pound the ball, that's not what the Giants offense is anymore. It's just not.
It's true.
That's not what it is. And if you're looking to make a splash a week after the draft, I don't know where you're going to make it. There ain't no water left in the swimming pool. So you're going to jump in and you're just going to splat. Because there ain't no water left to make a splash. There aren't any stars left out there to add to the team. It's just not feasible.
Yeah, I mean, you have Paul Perkins and Gallman, two young guys who were drafted in each of the last 2 years. Shane Vereen, your veteran, who's also your best receiving back. You brought in Sean Drone, who's also a
solid receiver.
And you have Darkwa, who's familiar with the system, who I think is as close to a goal line back amongst all the other backs, if you're going to at least assign them roles.
Yeah, he'd be the power back, that, you know, one cut and go. Len, I'm going to have to ask you to be a little bit brief. You can feel free to call back tomorrow to make your larger point, but if you have something you want to get in today, let's get that in, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me be upfront and declare. You know, the more I watch video, the more I listen, the more I read, you know, the draft is starting to come together in my mind. You know, I think those first four guys, are going to make the roster. I think three guys will contribute. Maybe Gallman a little late. Listen, Gallman was a godsend at 140. We went 53 picks between our third round and our fourth round. I thought that fourth round pick would never come. And listen, he's a good football player. And in fact, all of these picks, you know, the Pro Football Focus guy said that, you know, the quarterback, you know, slacked off toward the end of the season. But these guys are all ascending. I mean, they were having their best years. Junior year was better than sophomore. Senior was better than junior. I like that.
Well,
and these are veteran guys, big programs. The stage isn't going to be too big for these guys. I mean, I think it's been positive. I think the first two contribute right away. Yeah, you know, Webb's not going to get a uniform for a couple of years. But much can be said on either side about that pick. But, I mean, if Jerry thinks we should have gotten quarterback, actually, when you look down that list, there's not a whole lot of other people there. I mean, you know, you might as well pick the quarterback. I like Gallman. The other guys will compete. The tackle, the eighth offensive lineman. I mean, what do you want out of a sixth-round pick?
I agree.
I think Moss... You know, keep him at defensive end. I like Jerry's theory. Keep him at defensive end. He's a pass rusher. You know, we got four guys competing for three spots.
Yep.
And, the guy's got a shot. And if he doesn't make it, carry him on the practice squad and bring him back next year and see what happens. I think 00's in trouble. I think this kid can beat out 00. But in any event, you know, I like the draft. Hey, real quick, on the linebacker thing, no real backup for Goodson. Lance, I know, give the young guy a chance here in the spring. Let's see what he can do, et cetera. But I'm really worried about what the alternate plan is if it doesn't work out. I think it's going to work out. I think he's going to be a good football
player.
Plays downhill.
Len, you can
this
always...
This guy plays downhill on every down. And one more thing. Let me give you a name. Here's my sleeper guy for next year on the Giants. At linebacker. Nobody's mentioned his name. Ishaq Williams from Notre Dame. Watch this kid. He's going to be a player, guys. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
You got it.
Appreciate it. Remember, you can
yeah.
always, thanks for the call, you can always put Keenan Robinson on the field for three downs if
of
I
course.
Wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think that's your backup to Goodson if he doesn't work out.
I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, he threw out Ishaq Williams. He was on the practice squad last year, undrafted free agent, was boosted up to the roster a little bit late in the season. And, you know, he's somebody that also could, I think, be brought down to the line of scrimmage based on how he was utilized at Notre Dame. I mean, he's a name that you can't forget. It's going to be an opportunity for him in the spring. I mean, there's a few guys that are somewhat of unknown commodities. And, you know, this is the time of the year where you start to make a name for yourself. But, you know, Goodson, I think, is going to get opportunities. I agree with you, John. You know, Keenan Robinson has the versatility to move him around. And, you know, JT Thomas is another name. Let's not forget about that. JT Thomas missed all of last season because of the injury. We tend to forget. You know, he's still around, too. And there's a guy that I think they can move around as well.
And, again, not to be picky, but Gallman probably had a better 2015 than he had in 2016 because
that
he
was
wasn't used
yeah.
nearly as much, which is what you
no doubt.
Up
and the number showcases. Just look at the carries. Forget the production.
Oh, yeah.
Just
absolutely.
Look at how many carries he got.
Yeah, his yards per carry actually weren't that much different. So it's just something you got to take a look at. Finally, Dre in Atlanta. Dre, wrap us up, man. Make your point. Be quick.
Oh, you already know I'm going to be quick. What's up, John?
What's up, dude?
Lance?
How we doing?
Great. Here's a quick question. Do you really think, I'm going to keep it short, you really think Bosmani will actually create a real competition between the tackles and the guards? And I take that off the air. Thanks.
Thank you. Look, I mean, I think he's going to be there. I think he's going to get snaps. He's a four-year starter at left tackle. I mean, do the Giants realistically think that their sixth-round pick in this rookie season is going to beat out their first-round pick from three seasons ago? I mean, look, probably not. But he's going to go there, and he's going to get snaps. So there will be a competition. And if he does, you know, put a little fire there and, you know, really make a play for it, great. You got to see what happens.
Yeah, the one thing I will add to that is Jerry Reese, when he was on with Francesa, did say that he is expecting Flowers and Bobby Hart to make significant strides in terms of their play this offseason. Now, you know, that was also said even before that interview, that the writing is on the wall for this being a critical year and a critical offseason for them to push themselves forward. And you've heard a lot of people on the record from the Giants organization talk about they're already impressed with their work ethic so far over the course of the offseason. But, I mean, realistically, you know, Flowers is in line to take back his left tackle spot and run with it. Bisnawati is going to be there to provide depth and competition, but I would agree with you from a realistic standpoint. And here's another thing, even from a fan standpoint, John, do you want a guy in the sixth round who's a rookie, even though he has a lot of experience, do you want him replacing a guy who may have had some ups and downs but has 2 years of starting experience?
No, probably not.
Week one in Dallas against the Cowboys.
And remember, Bisnawati is older than Eric Flowers.
Yeah. That's
he's
true.
24. I think he's older than isn't Bobby Hart only 23?
I'm
not mistaken.
So.
I believe he's older than Bobby Hart too. And by the way, so is Ryan Ramczyk and so is Garrett Bowles. So as Jerry Reese pointed out, you know, those two players would have been coming out in this year's draft if they played until they were seniors.
Hart is 22. And he's going to be 23
also,
in August.
Right?
And let's see, Eric Flowers is 23.
He just turned
23.
Okay. Yeah. So they're the same age. Exactly.
Yeah. So Bisnawati comes in already older than the two of them.
Correct. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thank you to John Peterson and Sam Monson for joining us. Tomorrow, Meadow DeTino will be back with you right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a great day.
Have a good one.